And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Louis Fertel. I want to say award season is rolling along, but my God, we still have so much time until the Oscars. So I just want to say award season is both postponed and currently happening. You make heads or tails of it. I don't understand. Meanwhile, our guest today is a returnee to Keep It. And in general, fabulous altogether. Love to hear where he's coming from. And I want to talk about a movie he did in just a second. But first of all, Dwayne Perkins, welcome back to Keep It.
Thank you so much. It's been so long.
Last time you were here, you were talking about your movie, The Blackening. And I just have to say about this movie, and I liked The Naked Gun. It is funnier than The Naked Gun.
Oh my God. That's saying a lot, because Naked Gun is really that girl.
Yeah, but like your spoof, it lasted the entire way through the movie. Every character was popping, and I feel like The Naked Gun sort of phoned it in with a few characters near the end.
Yeah, I feel like I really take comedy serious in a way that's sometimes too serious. But like, I'm very happy that you said that, because that was a film where I love horror, I love comedy. So to really imbue like, yes, this should be funny, but also it should be a horror movie. So like trying to really strike that balance, I think, created kind of like a new lane.
Yes.
In a good way.
And everybody in it was fabulous.
Thank you.
Also coming up, you have your Dynasty Typewriter one-man show. Tell us about that.
I have a one-man show called How Being Black and Gay Made Me Better Than You. And it's about my experience growing up being black and gay and how that culminated in me being fantastic and better than everyone.
Now, okay, let me just say, when you title a special that, I mean, it's like Shark Tank, you have the floor. I mean, I want to know point A to point Z.
Yeah, and I think from beginning to end, that the show was just truly me being like, look how great I am. And I'm going to keep doing things so that you agree. Like, and by the end of the show, how can you not? Like, you're going to be like, wow, he did so much. And a lot of it is just doing things just because I can. There's a full opening number just because, why not? There's a bunch of tech. Like, there's just a lot of things that I wanted to be extra for just because I can. And that's the whole point of the show. I've been like, oh yeah, like once you've gone through enough, the ways that you felt like you can be oppressed can then become a superpower. And I feel like I learned that pretty young. And then I said, okay, I know how this works. Then I became fantastic.
You know who this reminds me of? You ever seen the old Sandra Bernhard special, Without You, I'm Nothing? There's like multimedia components, and she also sings, and there's a whole part where she's just dancing to Little Red Corvette. Some ideas for you.
Okay, no, but I'm going to look at it, because I'm working on the show right now. Like, I'm expanding it. Just seeing how many ways I can just add more.
Just like different components, just different.
Generally, just
a decathlon of comedy.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to feel like an amusement park ride. And it says we're like, from the moment you walk into the door, you're like, what is going on? What is this? And once you leave, you just kind of have like a full experience. And that's fun for me to kind of play God in that way. Being like, I want to control your brain from like the moment you step into the door, where you're like, oh, I'm in his world. And so I'm just figuring out as many ways in which I can like incorporate that.
Now, do you have other comedians you kind of look to in this regard? Like, who's doing this sort of multimedia, arty circus?
I feel like a lot of it is inspired by coming up in Chicago. Mm. It was such an artful city where there was not a lot of capital. Like, there was not, like, a lot of jobs. So you weren't really doing it to try to get jobs. You were just trying to figure out a way to showcase yourself in the best way possible because you wanted jobs. You're like, if anybody saw this, I want to be able to show as much of myself as I can as a calling card. Because the people that were coming into town were all from the coast. So you really had to, like, utilize your one moment, because that one moment could change your life. And I feel like I've just embodied that from early on, of being like, you never know when you're going to get another moment. So that moment has to be as shiny as possible, as polished as possible, so that it doesn't, you never regret what you did when you had that opportunity. And so like, I feel like I'm inspired, but like, I've watched a lot of one-man shows. Mm-hmm. And the hope would be to like sell it as a special, but also to probably eventually do it on Broadway. So like the John Leguizamo, Whoopi Goldberg, Alex Edelman. I've done a lot of research just to kind of figure out who has already occupied that lane? Who am I? And how does this lane kind of morph with me being in it?
Well, I'll just tell you that Alex Edelman beat me for an Emmy when we were up for writing the Oscars and he did his one-man special. So now, not only am I rooting for you, but I'm bitter about this conversation. And actually, it's twisted me into further congratulating you.
Thank you. I think spite is a great motivator.
Yeah, the only motivator. I can't believe people do anything for any other reason.
That's one of the big reasons of my show. I've been like, oh no, I just really need to show everybody what has occurred because you wronged me. And I'm only going to get better because how dare you doubt me? Yeah. You said no to me. You regret it.
There's a new documentary about the songwriter Diane Warren, and that she literally talks about, she goes, the only reason I do anything is because somebody told me I couldn't.
Yes, because how dare you. And like her, I'm going to be nominated for things of much and probably not win. And that has been my story. It's not Emmy winner, Emmy nominated.
That's right.
I did not win, but I was there.
Now, speaking of nominations, you're, of course, on The Studio, which is up for Best Ensemble at the SAG Awards coming up next Sunday. I'm currently writing on the SAG Awards. But my God, what an incredible company to be a part of. And I'll say this for a couple reasons. One, it's a great show. Two, the volume of straight people I actually love who are on this show, it's never been done.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen seems like a fucking fabulous man. And by the way, knows everything. He has like a gay man's like pop culture vocabulary.
Yeah, I'm kind of like obsessed with him. I really had to like talk to myself morally because I was like, I really looked at him as like the blueprint of like what I want to do. And I had to really just rectify and be like, this is a straight white man and I want everything he has. And he's just... he's really great. Like he forces me to kind of like look at my own biases. Cause I think just in business, I think I come into spaces just being like, what is this going to be? Cause it could, things are good. Things are bad. And every experience I've had with him cause I met him as a writer on Sasha's Party.
Oh, of course.
On Amazon. I was a co-EP.
Foodtopia, right? Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And it was just like he was very easy, chill, low key. We just like text each other like jokes and shit. And then every opportunity after that, he's the same. And I'm always just kind of like being like, oh, like this is just who, like you've really managed to create such a strong sense of self that's like rooted in like good and niceness in an industry that's historically not that. And he's been famous for so long. And he knows so many people. So,
yeah.
And I feel like he could be insane. Like the equation could equal insane person. And yet he's not. And he's so pleasant. And I'm really happy to be a part of that show. And that is a good experience. I don't have to like lie.
Yeah. No, he's like cut from the same cloth as like Jimmy Kimmel, where it's like, there's like a commandment that they're going to stay the same, like unchanging after all these years. Maybe marijuana helps. I can't explain it. Yeah,
and he still gets like nervous. He's like super humble in a way that's like so endearing. And I just like watch him and I learn so much, like just him being in it, directing, right? Just like all the things that he do. And like even from like the stoner stuff, I had my stoner phase. And by that, I mean, I'm in it. And but then like doing that, doing The Studio, doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like just the range and that he's able to kind of exist in this industry is like exactly what I want.
Now, also, of course, on The Studio, Catherine O'Hara, also nominated for a SAG right now. Mm-hmm. You're a co-star on that show. We had her on Keep It years ago. And I almost think there's such a thing as being too nice. Like she literally will just introduce you to her whole family if you like talk to her for 3 minutes, like deeply, deeply. What was your experience working with this person who I described her last week as the Julie Andrews of comedy? Like somebody we just beloved and reliable, and something about her is just extraordinary.
I agree. And I try not to like lean into like stereotypes because I'm like, that didn't help me. But like the whole like Canadians are nice. I was just like, is this real? Because like I felt the way about like just being on set and being like, oh, this feels like a different kind of whiteness.
This is ivory.
Yes, that, whoa, what is this? Bring more of this. Like, this is so nice, so pleasant. And I feel like exactly what you said, where she just was casually nice in a way that was like, oh, you are treating me like somebody that you've known for a long time. You don't understand like what that is doing for me as a fan. So yeah, she was just very, very nice. Like I remember just like at South by Southwest, we were drinking like margaritas and just like sitting on a couch and talking about like nothing in particular, but just like chatting. And I just remember thinking like, I don't know if you know like how I'm feeling, but I had to like play it down because I didn't want to be like, hey girl. And then on one of the last days of shooting, I asked for a photo because I was like, hey, I know like I've been trying to be like real cool and casual. Like we've been chatting, but like I need this to like go down in my history. Like, I need like record that like this is real. Like I'm like pinching myself. And it's on my Instagram right now. And we were both like smiling. It was just like such a joyous situation. She was great. And I'm very, very grateful that I got to have that experience. That show is just, it has produced so much like good for me in like a very healing way like both as like a person, but also just like in this industry. So yeah, shout out to her.
We'll say, well, luckily it's also just a fabulous show that's extremely rewatchable. I mean, like the level of quality just in the production of it before you even get to the fabulous performances is just so fabulous.
It looks so good.
You know?
Yeah.
And we've got more of it to come. Okay, this episode. First of all, Dwayne and I were already reunited last night while we were in the movie theater preparing for this episode. So we're going to talk about Pillion, the new Alexander Skarsgård movie. Uh-huh. The new, I guess we would call it a BDSM rom-com.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Which we weirdly have very few of.
Yes. Rom-com.
If you will. A rom... Yes, right. And also, actually, that does make an appearance in it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Very early on.
Yeah, we'll get into that. So we'll be discussing that this episode. And then also, checking my watch, it is still Black History Month. So we're going to be talking about the Black Actress Hall of Fame.
Nice.
Just some of our favorites we're going to bring up. And then otherwise, we'll get into Keep It, the sauciest part of the episode. Mm-hmm. We'll force Dwayne to fill out his Oscars ballot and see what he's into, what he's seen, what he hasn't seen.
Yeah, voter intimidation.
What I was born for. This is my calling. We'll be right back with more Keep It. This episode of Keep It is brought to you by Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first bake-from-frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, artisanal pastries, and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. Unlike many store-bought options, Wild Grain uses simple ingredients you can pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer in nutrients and antioxidants. There's no preservatives and no shortcuts. Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable. In addition to their variety box, they have a gluten-free box, vegan box, and a new protein box. I never thought I was a sourdough bread guy. When I go to San Francisco, I simply don't think about it. But baking it for myself, and picture me doing that. Does that sound like me at all? I love this sourdough bread, and it made me feel like I can actually do this stuff, which, as you know about me, I'm barely skilled. There's nothing like having an artisan bakery in your freezer to chase away the winter chill. Now is the best time to stay in and enjoy comforting homemade meals with Wild Grain. I highly recommend giving Wild Grain a try. Right now, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box, plus free croissants for life. For life! When you go to wildgrain.com/keepit to start your subscription today. That's $30 off your first box and free croissants for life when you visit wildgrain.com/keepit, or you can use promo code KEEPIT at checkout. This podcast is sponsored by Strawberry.me. Let me ask you something. Do you think LeBron, Patrick Mahomes, or Serena Williams got to the GOAT status by guessing? No, they had coaching, just like I did in understanding who those names are. Every pro athlete has a specialized coach watching their form, calling the plays, and finding the blind spots they can't see themselves. That is exactly how they win championships. My favorite coach from a movie, let me think. It has got to be Emilio Estevez in The Mighty Ducks. Emilio Estevez set those kids up for success in that movie, so much so that by the time they actually win, they all know the words to Queen's We Are the Champions, which exceeds any pop culture expectations I have of children that age anymore. So why are you trying to win in your career without a coach? You're grinding away, hoping for a promotion, trying to guess the right moves. You need a strategist. You need Strawberry.me. Strawberry.me matches you with a professional career coach who can help you negotiate that raise, navigate the politics, and execute a game plan that actually works. And the cost? Think about it. One raise, one promotion, and this coaching pays for itself 10 times over. Stop riding the bench in your own life. Go to strawberry.me/keepit today and get 50% off your first coaching session. Strawberry.me, because pros don't guess. They get coached to win. Alexander Skarsgård and Harry Melling lead the A24 film Pillion, directed by Harry Lytton in his first feature effort. Some are calling it a dom-com. Others are calling it a psychological drama. I call it an hour and 40 minutes waiting until I can yelp the closest biker bar near me. Dwayne, how did this film land on you? And is it flying under the radar right now? What do you think of this movie?
I would say I went to the theater late.
Yes.
And I said, I'm going to watch this movie. And I was a little tired. And the fact that I didn't go to sleep, I said, wow, there's something here.
I have to tell you, I have a problem right now where I will fall asleep in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. There was no chance of falling asleep during this movie. And by the way, it's not, compulsively, garishly entertained. It's not like there's visuals flying at you mm-hmm. the entire time. It really engrosses you into this story of just two people, really. And a story I'd kind of never seen before.
Yes. Like, I think that there's something interesting. There's like a line of like asking like what's going on. And I think once it's like, if it's like macro, just like what's going on in this movie? Not great. If it's micro, I'd be like, what's going on with these people? And that's what I was feeling. Be like, what is going, like, how, why are they making these choices? And I had like questions about the characters. And I felt like that is what I feel like I want movies to do, is like, I'm in it enough to really want to know like what's happening. And I feel like that's why I was up, because I was like, I need to know like, where is this going? Like, what's about to happen? Like, I've never really seen a story like that. So I just didn't know their take. So I was enthralled with being like, because movies are pretty formulaic. And I was like, at some point, this is going to go south.
Yeah.
How? What are they going to do? So yeah, I enjoyed it. I do think it's flying under the radar in a way. I think with the popularity of the gay stuff that's out right now, like Heated Rivalry, that I feel like this just felt more specific in a way that I think it's harder for people to kind of meet.
Yeah. I also think I first heard about this movie in conjunction with Heated Rivalry, mm-hmm. that there are these two kind of gay, I won't call them phenomena, but I'll call them the exciting stories where intimacy is a big part of it. And we're just exploring the vibe between two characters and how it's tenuous and how it could shift at any moment, how there are stakes. I think what was interesting about this movie to me is just I've seen very little gay BDSM in movies, period. And when I see the A24 banner, I'm like, how much do they really know? Like, mm-hmm. how much investigative journalism have they done on this topic? Like, am I going to feel like this is purely for onlookers, you know, like straight yeah. people sort of curious? And a part of me watching this movie, actually, I don't know that I'm disappointed by it. I'm questioning how quaint it was, because it's a very quaint story for a BDSM relationship, I think. Mm-hmm. But the two of these people, Harry Melling is just this guy whose life is sort of humdrum, and then he meets this biker guy who's always in full biker gear, like full yes. leathery gear all the time, Alexander Skarsgård, who sort of picks him to be his partner. And by that I mean, he's like, oh, you'll cook for me, oh, you'll sleep on the floor near the bed, you know. It's like this yes. like very there are a lot of rules to the relationship that go unspoken but must be followed.
Yes.
You know,
that's the, and I think that's the part that I was most intrigued by, because I was curious to know if they were going to like explore it more, but they didn't. They just kind of like presented it and you just had to go with it.
Yeah,
because I just kept thinking like, why is he doing this? Like yeah. There was one moment in particular very early on where, like, he first, like, walks into the alley with Alexander Skarsgård's character. And, like, he takes off his jacket and hangs it up. And then the other guy takes off his jacket and it falls to the ground. And he says, leave it. And I was like, you gonna leave your jacket on this dirty alley floor? What is this? I feel like it was such a separation from, like, my experience that I was intrigued. But I was kind of sad that they didn't go deeper into kind of like the whys. It just kind of was, this is what it is.
Yeah, because like he's into it. He's into being kind of told what to do. Uh-huh. But you don't really hear, not that you need to explain yourself, but like yeah. we don't really, it's just that he likes it. So he does it. You know, there's like no yeah. answers otherwise.
No, he just kind of leans in the way he's like, okay, cool. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
I said, oh, this is, and because personally is so far away from like something that feels innate to me.
Yeah.
I just want it more. But I think that is exactly why I leaned in, because it felt kind of similar, the relationship to the audience that they had. It been like, oh, you just come with, like, just come with me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to tell you. Just watch it. And that, I felt like that parallel was like intriguing.
Yeah.
Because I kind of felt like, what's the word I'm looking for? What's the word where you like, this is crazy, like you like almost make somebody come, but then you stop.
Oh, edging.
Edging.
There we go.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
I was like, I know the word.
I like how you gooned that word out of yourself. That was interesting. Because by the way, there are parts in this movie where the Harry Melling character, he has these parents who are very encouraging of him and like pro-gay, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to this guy, they have lots of questions, namely his mother, who is dying of cancer. And she actually has a scene where she confronts the Alexander Skarsgård character. And in that moment, I almost didn't like that she was acting on behalf of the audience, like asking, like, well, why are you acting like this? Why are you doing this? Then it became almost too on the nose for me. So mm-hmm. in a way, I wanted the movie to explain itself more and explain itself less. So I think I can only applaud the movie for including these characters that are like, you know, all ambiguous about what's going on, but also kind of just going with it.
See, that felt like edging too, because we still never got an answer.
Yeah.
And I was like, but like, who are you? Like, what is this?
Yeah, we don't know what like his job is, because I have the feeling he's really good at his job.
Yeah, I guess by the end, maybe they want us to feel what he felt, but like that lack of information, I was so confused by. And then he just kind of disappeared. There was a moment where I got a little lost, where I was like, what's real? What's not? What's going on? Where'd he go? And then by the end, I just was jealous, because then he got with some fine black man. And I said, I want this.
Never mind, it's about me.
I said, oh, I am him. This is
by
my
the way,
story.
I did not know what the word pillion meant. Do you know what that means?
No.
It's the second seat on a motorcycle, like that you bring a passenger onto. I thought it was like a brand of something. He's in the passenger seat on the biker. You know what I mean?
Oh, you know what's crazy? Until right now, I have this thing, and I did it when I was younger too, where like if I don't know something, I simply forget about it. And I did not for once think, what does the title of this movie mean?
No, I thought it was maybe his last name or something.
Literally, I said, that must be a person. Oh, yeah. I assumed that like his name was like Ray Pillion, because his name was Ray.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's crazy.
No.
There was a lot of shots of him on the back of that bike. Now that makes sense.
Yeah, right. And by the way, I am deeply anti-motorcycle. So it took me a while to like get through that moment. Like, I can't sit through Easy Rider. I don't want to see these people. Yeah.
Why?
But it's frightening. What are we doing?
Yeah.
We're going fast on concrete.
I am scarred.
Yes.
By trauma. And so there was a moment where he was riding on the bike without a helmet. And I said, this faggot's finna die.
I know.
I said, this is the end for
Please
him.
Don't make this
I said,
movie.
Oh, no. Yeah. I said, this is where it's going?
Yeah.
And then it did it. And I said, oh, wow. Edged.
Yes.
What a ride. I'm on the edge of my seat.
You really went through it.
I was. I was in my seat being like, this is why I love going to movies by myself. Because it's just
the
like, there's nothing but me and my thoughts. And me being like, what's going on? And it was crazy.
Oh, I want to be clear that I ran into Dwayne at our screening of Pillion last night. Mm-hmm. And I felt like Siskel and Ebert, where it was just like, we're both watching the movie. And I said bye to you when I left. I was like, mm-hmm. I don't want to hear what you think
yet. I said, we will talk about this later. Yeah. I was one row directly in front of you.
Yes.
It just so happens we picked our seats very close. It was fate.
Yeah, right. No, we belong here, et cetera. I will say this, again, speaking to the quaintness in the movie, which I feel like it teetered a little bit safe. Again, I just wanted like a couple more unsafe moments in the movie. But at the end, so you just said he and Alexander Skarsgård kind of break up and he disappears. We don't know what happens to Alexander Skarsgård because everything about him is aloof. So it sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
But he finds this new guy, and while he's doing it, he's putting together his Grindr profile and he's saying, I'm very good at following instructions. Basically, taking all the lessons he learned from this past relationship and putting it into his new one. Who is that adult about like what they learn from a relationship? If I were him, I would still be like on MapQuest looking for Alexander Skarsgård.
I think I'm that person. I think that there was something very like gratifying of just being kind of being like, well, that's over. I guess I'm gonna try to do this again. And because like basically, I feel like that moment was him just being like, oh, I'm the same, except I have now one boundary, which is sometimes I want to feel loved. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, how else will you kind of get that out instead of him publicly writing it on an app to people?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay. Like it was very hard to watch the movie and not think of it from like a filmmaker's point of view to be like, oh, what device would you get this information out in best? And I thought that was nice of a character to kind of have a moment where they just have to deal with the reality of the situation, which is like, oh, well, this man's gone. I don't know where he's at. Tried to find him. What now? Guess I'm going to move on.
I almost wonder, I mean, like, even though he states it explicitly with putting together the Grindr profile, it might have actually been better if he just went on a date with that guy and brought, like, the dish he had made for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he needed to state so explicitly, like, and I've come out of this relationship on top and with new information about myself. Like, you know, it felt a little kumbaya.
Yeah. And I think that's for not smart people.
Right.
Like, I think, because that part really at least solidified for me, like, oh, okay, we want to know that there's some growth. If he just would have kind of like did it again, I would have been like, and the cycle continues.
Yeah, which also would have been good, would have been believable.
It would have.
By the way, I do think good tension that is established in the movie, though, is when he's, you know, got this relationship with Alexander Skarsgård and it's not a loving relationship. In fact, the word love has come up and Alexander Skarsgård swats it away and continues reading his book. When he makes his plays for more affection, like sneaking into the bed, and you know it's going to go poorly,
yeah.
but you also know he has to do it. So it's like just a very believably cinematic moment. Like that to me, I had not really seen in a movie before, and I thought that was really cool.
Yes, specifically the one time where he did it twice, like back to back.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm the queen now.
And I was like, oh no, this is crazy.
Yeah.
It's because they, like, for his birthday where he was like, oh, he got fucked a missionary. And I said, what a birthday gift. like that moment where he like seeing the other kind of like submissive guys kind of like have moments of like tenderness with their partners. That moment I felt was like really interesting. And that's why I wanted to just know more. Because I'm like, oh, so there is a dynamic where like this can exist. But there are factors that are more intimate and he's just not getting it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder what is making Alex's character like make that choice when the other guys are not.
Right. No, and also, yeah, near the end of the movie, like he makes some concessions. He's like, yeah, we'll try a romantic date one time. But a part of you in the back of your head is going, this is the beginning of the end. This is not what he does. This is a man who wants his eggs cooked for him and then he sleeps in his bed and you sleep on the floor.
So in my mind, and maybe because I did smoke a little before I went to go see this movie, was that real?
Like, what?
The
you're right.
Date.
Like, maybe
I just wasn't sure.
Like the cinematography totally changed.
Yeah, like I feel like a lot of it changed.
Yeah.
And there was just certain shots and things that I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be feeling. Because he was like on the bike and then it just cut to him like on the porch. And
yeah.
then I was like, I don't know if this is real. Because then once they do like the nice cutesy date, then he just disappears.
Yeah.
And it cuts to him like lying on the floor holding his phone. And I didn't know if that was like a fantasy sequence, if that was the moment it was always supposed to be. So that's when the movie kind of took a turn for me.
But that's also good because it's like he thought he was satisfied with this relationship. But if he in fact was fantasizing about how it could be, it's like the relationship was really reaching its natural end anyway, you know?
Yes. And I feel like that's what it represented to me of like, oh, this is the end. Because for him to get that version of it, that is inherently changing what the dynamic is. So that can't continue. So I didn't know if that was like an actual like Alex's character giving him like an ending to be like,
yeah.
oh, this is over. Or if that was the ending he created in his head knowing that that was over.
Do you have a favorite sexual dynamic between two characters in a movie? I can't even remember the last time I talked about what was happening vibe-wise between two characters in a relationship. Like I have this movie. Like a queer movie I happen to love is Carol. And there's an older movie by Andrew Haig called Weekend I really like.
I was literally about to bring that up.
Weekend is so that bad bitch.
I remember watching that and being like, oh, this is what queer... Like it really changed my idea of like how gay people can be portrayed.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
It was clearly a gay writer and director.
I loved it.
Yes. Those actors who, by the way, I don't feel like I've seen since were like fabulous.
It feels like such a secret.
Yes.
And it's so good.
Unpretentious.
Yeah, and it really displayed like a kind of like intimacy and love that felt so real. And I was so invested. And yet it was so like such a short time within the film. So I feel like that's probably my favorite dynamic I've seen on screen
yeah.
with queer people.
Also in that movie you just said it, like what they have is very momentary, which is similar to the characters in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that too. Like exploring romance as sort of like a whim or as, you know, sort of a comma before you move on with the rest of your life.
Yes.
And, you know?
And that feels like I've had those moments where like I took a trip to like Mexico City and I had like a 3-day love affair. And I was like, oh, what a movie. Like it was so lovely and beautiful. And to be able to kind of share that and then be like, I may never see you again.
No.
Back. Here I go.
But that's also having a productive, like, fabulous life. Like, literally, I cannot hear the fucking Padam Padam Kylie Minogue song without being zapped back to Fire Island 2023. And I'm like, that lapsed Mormon.
Yeah, like, it creates beautiful memories. And I think that helps you become a better person because you have just, like, experiences of love that aren't tied to like time, they aren't tied to kind of these things.
Kind of a heterosexual norm, really,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's just like, that feels like freedom to me, being able to like love in these like moments of time and then still care that like, if I saw that guy today, I'd be like, oh, we share such a special moment. Like,
yeah.
And being able to have
it's not awkward.
And
yeah.
then just have it be that. Like there's nothing more than that moment that we shared that we'll have and then life happens. But like, so yeah, I feel like those moments are beautiful. And I feel like there were moments in this where I wanted more of that, but I got like enough. And I thought it was interesting. And this is going to sound kind of shady, but even like the way that they looked. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that dynamic of being like, oh, like I think queerness is seen through such a lens at times that has a certain aesthetic. And it was cool to see kind of this guy who isn't like traditionally what I think people would think is like the gay aesthetic.
Yeah, or a movie star or something.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was really nice because in my youth when I was a whore.
And well, thank God that's over.
I know, what a time. And I was like into cruising and like kind of that space. The fun was kind of knowing that like these are people with full lives kind of stepping out of that moment to kind of have this moment of like scandal of like, oh, we're doing this thing. I don't know where you were before this. I don't know where you're going after this.
Yeah.
But in this moment, this is what we're doing. And so that felt real to me in a way that that also helped me like lean in more. I felt like somebody who at least wrote it like knew or like experienced that before. Like that alley scene, I was like, oh yeah, like who hasn't walked in an alley with a stranger and was like, this, I could die or I could come.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And the answer is it's usually both.
Yeah.
No, tell me what you think of Pillion, a movie that I would say is a 3-star movie. I really enjoyed it. And I recommend basically everybody would see it. There's nothing too ultimately extremely graphic either. Mm-mm. Bring the whole family, honestly.
Yeah. Beware though. I did get hard like twice.
Okay.
I said,
the movie gets 2 O's.
And, yes, and I was like, all right, well, now we've moved on.
Now we're less like Cisco.
Yeah, because it'd be like sexy. And then it'd be like, now my mother's dying of cancer. And I'm like, oh, well, soft.
We were doing so well.
I know.
All right. Before our next segment, though, Dwayne, you have to fill out your Oscar ballot for us.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you think, who your favorites are, et cetera.
Best picture. There's so many.
I know. I would prefer it be a 5 thing instead of 10.
Yeah, okay, let me see. Okay. Ooh, F1, Sexy Men. Hamnet, very sad. I say for Best Picture, my top two would be Sinners and Frankenstein. Sinners, because I thought it was great. Also, love my blacks. Frankenstein, similar. Like, I love me a genre film, and I think it's a lot harder for genre films to be acknowledged. So Guillermo, that's my guy. But overall, I think I would pick Sinners because Ryan Coogler, love you, daddy. best actor. Okay, this gets a little harder. Timothy, such a young star.
Leo, the original clavicular. He's all clavicle.
I know. And he's been doing it for like since he popped out. I said, wow, this kid's onto something. I watched Wonka on a plane once and I said,
oh my God.
I didn't realize this was a musical. but I'm going to pick Michael B. Jordan because I feel like it's Black History Month. And to not is bad.
Also, dual roles. I mean.
Dua Lipa. Yep. Dual roles. And he did a great job.
Yep.
Best actress. Okay, so I'm obsessed with a couple of these people. I think Emma Stone, star. And she was great. And Begonia, Rose Byrne, I think her range is something that I want. Like, I want to, like, do what she does. Like, she's so fantastic. Kay Hudson, I met her at the GLAAD Awards once. She was so nice. And then she had, like, a QR code for her album. And I said, girl, you got an album?
She's a really good singer.
I know. And she performed that year. And I said, oh, this is great promo. I do have the album on my phone. So shout out to Kate Hudson. I will not pick you, though. I'm going to pick Emma Stone.
Another genre film, though, you know.
Agreed. And my friend was in that film, Stavros. Shout out to you. But Emma Stone has 97 Oscars now. So I think, okay, for that, I think I'm going to go with Rose Byrne because I think it's time she be acknowledged for how great she is.
Yeah. Give one to Australia. Yeah.
Hello. Best supporting actor. I'm, of course, going to give that to Delroy Lindo. I thought he was fantastic. Also, I think he's a good actor generally because I did not know he was not American.
no, and also he is amazing in everything. Yes, I mean, he's so great in Five Bloods. And
yeah, he was great in Crooklyn. Like everything I've seen him in, he's like an actor's actor. He's just great. Best supporting actor. Ooh, okay. So this is a little more difficult because I really did enjoy Amy Madigan. I thought she was ridiculous in Weapons. And I love that she got torn the fuck apart. but I also love Wumi and Tiana. Okay, I'm going to go with Wumi because I just think she was kind of the glue of Sinners. And why I think the film is as good as it is. She really grounded it, and she grounded the fantastic in a real great way. So best director. Okay. Shout out to Chloe, just because I think that it's great what she's been doing.
I love her. Yeah, great interviewee too.
She's really occupying a lane in a way that they have not allowed women. So shout out to her. But of course I'm going to have to go with Ryan Coogler because he's the best. And I'm just very happy of what he's been able to achieve. Like coming out of like the huge blockbusters and then being like, oh, I'm doing my own thing. And for it to be comparable, I think it's just a skill that I'm trying to learn myself. Then best casting, I'm going to go with Sinners as well. But I think One Battle After Another is like a very close one. I think that the amalgamation of that cast, like who they were like all over, is really great. But I'm going to vote for Sinners. But I feel like that would be like a very, very close second. Because I also love that they discovered new talent.
Yes.
And I'm obsessed with that. But I think as an ensemble, I really enjoyed Sinners. In like a real way, but yeah.
Honestly, all of those are qualified casting options. I think they all did something pretty amazing.
I agree.
Now I have to make you shove this in my box.
Oh, our very own Pillion Dynamic.
Yes,
right now.
Yes, right. All right, we'll be right back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by ZBiotics. This year, my friends and I are focusing on effortless presence, which means planning ahead so we can truly live in the moment, especially when my besties enjoy a few drinks. My simple trick for keeping the group balanced is handing out ZBiotics pre-alcohol like a fairy godmother before the festivities begin. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Every time my friends have pre-alcohol before drinks, we all notice a difference the next day. Even after a night out on a weekend getaway, we can confidently plan on early breakfast and a cute photo shoot by the pool the next morning without worry. Ready to try it? Go to zbiotics.com/keepit now. You'll get 15% off your first order when you use Keep It at checkout. Plus, it's backed by a 100% money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. Subscriptions are also available for maximum consistency. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/keepit and use code KEEPIT at checkout for 15% off. Keep It is brought to you by Nutrafol. Good hair days do more than we give them credit for. When your hair feels healthy, you show up differently. You feel more confident, more relaxed, and you're not constantly checking the mirror. Nutrafol supports hair health from within and delivers results over time, so your hair becomes something you enjoy, not something you stress about. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF-certified for sport, and clinically tested to measure improvements in hair growth, quality, and strength. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Nutrafol offers multiple formulas for men and women tailored to different life stages, like postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors, such as a plant-based diet, so you get support that's actually right for you. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20% and get added perks like a free Headspace membership to support your hair health journey. Let your hair become one less thing, taking up space in your head, and see thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you visit Nutrafol.com and enter promo code KEEPIT. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code KEEPIT. Thank you. Listeners, it's both award season and Black History Month, and while not all of the nominees for Best Actress and Supporting Actress are Black this year, that won't stop us from doing a whole segment spotlighting the most formative and impactful Black women whose work on screen stays with us and sets the high bar for their peers. So, Dwayne, where should we begin?
Oh, this is tough, because I feel like there's like a generalness, and then there's like my personal feelings.
Sure.
I think there's like non-starters where you just like know like your top actors. Like you have like your Viola Davises, your Regina Kings, and like the people who have like obviously been rewarded that we just know like, oh yes, this is the best.
Yeah, they're at the Oscars. Yeah.
But like personally for me, I would say like my favorite Black actress, I probably would say Regina Hall.
Oh.
I just think she is like my number one generally like comedian actor. Like, I just think her range, what she's able to embody, I think is very, very impressive. And then my second would be Nicole Beharie.
I was just thinking about Nicole Beharie.
I'm just like, I don't know why she is not more awarded. I feel like she should be on like that top list, because I think the way she acts, just everything that she does, there's just such a lived-in-ness. I like watch her before I do stuff, because I'm like, oh, I just want to be as good as her. Like, she's on my vision board right now that I made for this year, because I just think she is fantastic. So like those are like where I would start, like the ones who have been here, but then I feel like those are the ones that I'm like, oh, if I were to push some people up, those two in particular are the ones that I would put it on a pedestal.
We were talking about how Rose Byrne kind of can do anything, any kind of role, but it's like, not everybody gets the opportunity to express that level of diversity within like the range of what they do. And Regina Hall is somebody where we've gotten peeks into different directions. I mean, there's a movie called Support the Girls,
uh-huh,
where she's the lead of, and by the way, how often is Regina Hall the lead? Not very often, but she is just the normalest character in the movie. Mm-hmm. And if you know her from the Scary Movie franchise, you would think that is impossible. But in this movie, she's like figuring out how to run this restaurant, this Hooters type restaurant. Mm-hmm. All of the people she works with are like kind of head cases, and she's the level-headed one who's sort of like therapist and boss, and like her own life is sort of spinning out of control. And to see her capably just navigate that movie, as in not only is she good in the movie, but some actors just make you feel like you're in safe hands. She is that actress.
I don't know how like that was not a greater conversation, especially based on what she did prior, like before that, just kind of, I think there is like a kind of clout that comics and comedians get when they like pivot to like drama, where you're like, oh, you can do that. And I feel like she did it so well. And I was like yelling from the roof, like, hello, why is no one, like, this is very important. Give her everything she wants.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's that combination of indie movie and like, you know, it was sort of an unassuming movie in certain ways. Like, it wasn't saying, like, it didn't end in violently, or it didn't end,
no,
you know, it wasn't comic in like a garish way or anything.
No, it was like surprisingly very pedestrian in a way that I felt really showcased her acting in a way that she wasn't showcased before in that way. Yeah, I think she's just a fucking star.
And she also has been on Keep It. The next person I'm going to bring up was on our podcast a few years ago. Miss her terribly. She is so fabulous. Queer woman also. Are you an Anjanue Ellis Taylor stan?
Yes.
This woman can do fucking anything.
Yeah, I just finished a deck for this show that I'm trying to sell, and she's in it. And I just have this like fantasy of working with her. I think similarly, it's the ability to kind of fall into these roles and be good in everything. Like, that range is also insane. She's just, these are like actors. Like, I think there are celebrities who they are is bigger than like the product that they sell.
Yeah.
And these are people that when I think of them, I don't know anything about her actual life. Like,
right,
except that she's like a queer woman. All I know is like how good she is, like what she does. And that is like, to me, like the mark of a good artist is like, I'm so like distracted by how great you are. Like, that's all I see. She's been like, oh, like your resume, like what you do, the work that you do, and what she's willing to do. I think being able to jump from like small things to bigger things to TV, I just feel like she really encapsulate like a working artist.
Oh, no. I mean, if you look at her catalog, I mean, like, she was on Quantico for a while. You know, she, like, did all these sorts of different projects. But the difference between two of her most high-profile moments, which are she played Oracine Williams in King Richard, the wife of Richard Williams, who raised the Williams sisters. This always happens with a certain kind of class of actor where they're saddled with the role that on the page feels very normal, like the supportive mom. She has to tell the stubborn dad to, like, improve his ways, and she's got to raise these kids. Everything she does in that movie is 100% exceptional, not a cliche at all, and yet feels very real. This is a very weird parallel, but if, like, the mom on Malcolm in the Middle, that vibe of you are a Midwestern mom and you inhabit all of these ideas I have about being Midwestern, except you are not a cliche at all.
Goddamn, Lois. Yeah. What an icon. Like, oh my God. Malcolm in the Middle was my shit. That, I would say, like, on the studio, Bryan Cranston was, like, by far the person I was, like, starstruck by.
Oh, yeah. The most. And he's also just as nice as Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah. No. How was my ideal of a father? I was like, I grew up. And for me to be a black boy from the South Side of Chicago, being like, this white family, like, oh my, like, they are, like, we are them. Like, so yeah, I think, like, comedic actress, like, I think she is, I'm so glad you brought that up because I have not thought about that. I just watched a clip of her having a conversation with Bryan Cranston on the show. Like, that character was talking about how he loves her more than him, because she was like, you don't think about, like, girls, like, you don't, like, look at people. And he's like, no, like, you're all I want. And it was so, to, like, watch that scene and knowing that, like, this is on Malcolm in the, like, it was such good acting for this show about this family just, like, dealing with, like, these ridiculously behaved boys. It's so impressive. And I hate that comedy does not get as much, like, love as it should, because it's not easy. It's so hard.
No, often the best serious material is lighthearted, because, you know, it, like, comes in under the guise of pure comedy, and then you actually, like, oh, you struck a nerve.
Yeah, and that feels real to life, because a lot of people do use comedy as a way to process things, as a way to deal with things. So it's a lot harder to kind of play this lightheartedness knowing that there's something underneath it than just playing the thing that's underneath it.
Right. Back to Anjanue Ellis-Taylor, I want to say, by the way. So she played that role brilliantly. And then did you happen to see the Ava DuVernay movie Origin with her in it?
I made the mistake of watching it on a plane and be like,
there's a lot going on in that movie.
She is going through it.
Yeah. And also a purely, like, intellectual movie. It's about a woman writing the book that would eventually win her a Pulitzer Prize, Isabel Wilkerson. It's a movie, the book is called Cast. But first of all, the woman is going through a lot in her personal life, which is one half of the movie. But then otherwise, her just explaining the ideas that comprise this book. And it's like, when is the last time I watched a movie just about ideas and someone expressing them and convincing people to understand where she's coming from? It was just a completely different character. I am so in awe of her. I can't wait to see what she does next.
Same. That movie was difficult for me because of that exact reason. Like, oh, this feels like very, like, intellectual. And I'm watching this woman who is, like, very smart talk about this thing. And she made that person very human to me in a way that made me care about, like, what she was saying, because I cared about her. And I'm like, usually I'm just like, what are you talking about, girl?
Yeah.
But, and watching that, I'm like, oh, this woman, like, really cares about her work. And to see how that interacts with, like, her personal life and be like, oh, you're still working.
Yes.
Even though this thing just happened. Oh, okay, this person died. Oh, shit, this thing just happened. And seeing a person really grapple with, like, I'm doing this work that I find very important and that I love, but also my personal life's falling apart. And I said, damn, like, that, I know that, like, I've experienced it. Like, I feel like that's such a human experience, like, trying to keep your stuff together, because, like, you have to occupy so many hats. And to see her juggle, like, okay, like, that was masterful. And I was on that plane crying and being like, oh, I think people think I look crazy. Because I was like, oh, I need to watch this. Like, I'm going to support it. But then in the midst of it, I was like, I had no fucking clue this is what this movie was about.
And also, it's not like any other movie either. So it's, like, hard to explain genre-wise. It's a movie that would be difficult to sell to viewers because it's its own thing, you know?
Yeah, like, it kind of reminds me of, like, a mix between, like, a, like, drama, but also, what's that movie with Tom Hanks and he's, like, trying to find, like, Jesus or something?
Not the Polar Express.
The Da Vinci Code.
Yes, okay. Yes. We got there, yes.
I was like, I read the book.
Yeah, you're right. There's a little bit of, like, sort of mystification
in there.
Yeah,
there's, like, a, kind of like a, she's, like, walking around talking to people, doing this thing, and it feels kind of like, a mystery in a sense of like trying to come upon this like intellectual ideal. And then people just kept dying. And I just kept being like, everybody in your life is dying.
By the way, also, Anjanou Ellis Taylor was in that Ryan Murphy-ish movie a couple years ago with like Andra Day and Glenn Close.
Oh, that was Lee Daniels.
Lee Daniels. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. That has the highest concentration of good performances in a batshit movie I have ever seen. Why is Andra Day such a good actress? She was like purely a singer. And then she said, no, wait, I would like an Oscar nomination.
Literally, I agree. I feel like that movie was, it was such a, like,
Monique
a
is in
fun
it?
Time. Yeah. Like, it was, this was similar to what I was saying earlier. I mean, like, what is going on? But like a fun way of being like, what is going on? Oh my God. Glenn Close talking about nappy pussies.
She sure was. Yeah.
Anjanou said, yeah, I'm a pastor. And I said, love that. Okay, she's going to do a little exorcism.
Yeah, this, right.
Kids were being possessed. It was not right.
Yeah, I saw it on a vacation and my vacation became worse. I mean, it's
but the commitment to the performances, like,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, like I watched that stuff and be like, I gotta be a better actor. Like, I gotta do more. Like, they just committed in a way that is so admirable.
Yeah, like, I agree. Yeah. As in, there'd be no reason to watch it if they didn't go that 150%.
Yeah, like, I feel like that, it, you have to do that in order to kind of make that genre work.
Yeah. Do you have other, we talk about Danielle Deadwyler on this podcast all the time. I don't want to exhaust viewers. We had her, but she is like, when she was on the show, I said, it's not that you're talented, it's that you're fucking sick. Like, when this woman is on the screen, something happens to me. From Till to that fucking Carry On movie where she was like an action star. Yeah. She could do anything. She was great in The Piano Lesson.
Yeah. She was really good in The Woman in the Yard.
Oh, that's right. When we gave her a starring role. Yes.
Yeah. And there was another movie that I was like, oh, like as a film, I have some thoughts. But as a performance, I said, she ate that down. Like,
yeah.
The first time I saw her was in Atlanta. Right. And she was great in that. Like, and again, it's kind of, you never know who she's going to embody. And she does it very well.
Very casual sense of range. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get in that bag. Yeah.
Also, what are your favorite Nicole Beharie credits?
I really liked her in, what's the movie with Jessica Chastain?
Scenes from a Marriage or whatever?
Yeah, like married. And yeah, she's like, marriage, and there's like a scene where she's like at a table talking about her husband and like her issues. She's great in that. I really liked her in that Black Mirror episode.
Black Mirror has a lot of great acting in it that sort of, because it's like episodic television, ultimately, we sort of forget to talk about in the canon, you know?
She's also great in this movie called Miss Juneteenth. Mm. And she's a lead in that. Like, it also, she's great in The Morning Show. Like, everything I've seen her in, she just is really great. Oh, first saw her in Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, of course.
And I was like,
Christina Ricci was the first actress I was ever obsessed with.
Yeah.
Because I was Wednesday Addams too as a child.
You know? I love Sleepy. Like, the movie, fantastic. And then when she was on the show, I was like, oh yeah, like, she should lead like television show. Like, where's her television show? Like,
yeah.
So that's something, that's a goal of mine. I would love to work with her at some point because I just think she's a star.
Okay, well, viewers at home, you have to offer your favorite actresses in this canon. Who would you like to discuss more? And then should we just have them on Keep It? Because I'll just call them on their cell phone. I'll find the number.
Yes, you should do a Hollywood roundtable of who we think is the best.
Yeah, okay.
And I just want to be there to be like...
Coming right up. Yeah. We'll be right back with Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Quince. A well-built wardrobe is about pieces that work together and hold up over time. That's what Quince does best. Premium materials, thoughtful design, and everyday staples that feel easy to wear and easy to rely on, even as the weather shifts. Quince has everyday essentials I love with quality that lasts. Organic cotton sweaters, polos for every occasion, lighter jackets that keep you warm in the changing seasons, the list goes on. Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're not paying for brand markup, just quality clothing. Everything is built to hold up to daily wear and still look good season after season. Plus, they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. My favorite Quince item I own is actually a sweater. Now, here's the thing. In LA, I almost never buy long sleeve clothes, but the price was so right on this, I had to. And by the way, it's so comfortable and appropriate for most seasons. I could wear this in the summer and it'd still be light. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/keepit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/keepit. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/keepit. And we're back with the saltiest part of the episode. It's Keep It. I'm going to start with mine because it has taken up all of my time this past week and I need to get over it, and we're going to do it with this conversation.
Okay.
Some sort of meme emerged from, I'm going to guess, Brazilian Twitter, because I can't imagine it coming from anywhere else.
Oh, and they be on Twitter saying things.
Please. I know. I just saw Wagner Moura, the actor from Secret Agent, nominated for Best Actor. They have statues of him in the street like he's Jesus Christ. It's crazy. Anyway, they're at it again with their old tricks. There's this meme where pop stars are ranked in a hierarchy, a 7-level tier. And on the top level, level 7, it says, the legends on the hill. This includes people like Madonna, Celine Dion, you got Mariah Carey there, Whitney Houston, Britney Spears, Janet Jackson, and that's it. Below that, it's called the main stars. This is people like Lady Gaga, Beyonce. I just want to say, before I get into why I'm obsessed with this, I love that Lady Gaga and Beyonce aren't on the top layer yet. I love that there's still room for them to grow, because it's true. They're still active,
yes,
you know?
They're still very much doing it.
I just want to say before we continue, my keep it is to the fact that once I started looking at this fucking thing, I became addicted, obsessed with who made it, and also mad. So there's no resolution to any feelings I have. Let's talk about level 3, which is main testing phase. We got Chapel Roan. We have got Dua Lipa, Tate McRae. Main testing phase, meaning they're testing to be a main character in the pop world. And then there's niche testing phase, where people like Addison Rae belong. And I believe that's Ethel Kane.
Okay.
So, which is to say, you're trying out to be a niche star, which is more someone like Charlie XCX.
Got it.
Or like Lorde. Though honestly, Lorde is listed under niche peak. Does she deserve that? I don't know. I remember 2014 loving her, but this past album, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I definitely feel like at some point she was there. But yeah, I feel like talking about like relevancy to like right now, I feel like that kind of changes things.
Yes.
Because like I'm still stuck on Iggy Azalea. That's crazy.
Yeah, Iggy Azalea, it's hurting me too. It's hurting me too. If we could scroll up for a second to level 5, there's also the most amazing level on this whole strata is Museum Leaders, which is Katy Perry, Avril Lavigne, Kesha, Fergie. That's a bit generous to Fergie, I would say. And Kelly Clarkson. So they have a bunch of hits and they play them well.
Fergie was my shit. Like, my go-to karaoke. Like, there was an era where Fergie simply was that girl. Like, she really was the Black Eyed Peas. Like, it's one of the things that I have to, like, really contend with myself is saying that, like, unfortunately, they did get better when they added this white woman. Because there was a Black woman that they said, we're going to replace you with Fergie.
I remember the old Black Dang,
that's crazy. And then I said, actually, this gonna eat. I shouldn't be saying this during Black History Month, but I thought Fergie was great. And then her solo album, hits.
The Duchess.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Also, number one hit after number one hit.
I know. Big girls don't cry.
Yeah, right. Oh my God, you could not avoid that fucking... If you were dating somebody in 2007, unfortunately, the anthem was Big Girls Don't Cry.
Glamorous.
Yes.
London Bridges. Clumsy. Fantastic. Clumsy.
Yes.
Got Mr. LeBent. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Okay, never mind. She is a museum leader. Never mind. She is a museum leader. But I have to say, you can tell... This has to be a Brazilian person, because what is Bjork doing in Niche Peak? That's a completely different rubric. I see Bjork on this list, and I just want to tell this person, stay out of adults' business.
These categories are kind of wild.
Yeah. But
like, I would say some of this, I do agree with. I'm like, hey, they're onto something.
No, the reason I'm obsessed with is they mainly got it.
Yeah.
Also, my last complaint about this list on level 4, which is just called supporting acts, are shady. Miley Cyrus being there next to Demi Lovato, I think Miley has given us more than that. And also Cardi B is on that level, not a supporting act to me.
No, I feel like their 4 needs to be broken up like 3. Like there's different. I would say, because growing up I was like a Disney person, my attachment to like Selena Gomez, Demi Lovato, and Miley is kind of, it's been consistent in a way that I did not even realize. Like I think Demi Lovato, I may have like every album she's had like on my phone. Like there's just been like a kind of like a, oh, if you come out with something new, I just kind of support it, because like, oh, I just know you. And without knowing, I think I built like a relationship, like a parasocial relationship to them without even like knowing, but just been like, oh, I'll support you because you've been around my whole life.
How do you feel about the Hillary Duff resurgence then?
great.
That's like, how I feel. I'm sure. Yeah, right?
I'm just like, hey, girl, welcome back. I'm going to do the little choreo.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but it's giving museum leader.
She came out with that single, Sparks. I said, why is everybody not rally? This is great. Like, these are good songs. Like, I feel like there's just been periods where, like, Demi came out with, like, her rock album. I said,
yeah,
fun. I'm on board. She came out with then, like, a rock remix of, like, a lot of her songs. And I said, also great. I thought Miley's last stuff, great.
Like, all of her stuff is great. I often don't stand certain albums of hers, but like there's always great material on the album.
Yeah,
and like, also just her personality too, I think keeps her a cut above.
Do you know how often I say, they're trying to kill your favorite bitch? All the time. Even when she did that little, she said, I'm going to be black flag a little bit. I said, girl, this is weird.
Most also, of these girls had that face.
Some of these songs are kind of great. We Won't Stop. Fantastic.
Right. Yes. I also, my last complaint, Kylie Minogue is nowhere to be found on this. Excuse me. Put Kylie on the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's confusing. Anyway, what is your keep it this week, Dwayne?
Oh, my keep it is kind of personal, but I'm really tired of like seeing gay movies that I'm not in.
Oh, sure.
I think it's insane.
I feel the same way.
They keep asking people to do gay stuff and I'm not on that roster. like Heated Rivalry, cute. Was I in it? No, that's crazy. No. Pillion, I said, oh, this is cute. You know what would have been better? If Dwayne Perkins was in it.
And there's certainly a role for you somewhere in Pillion.
I agree. I could have had on a leather jacket.
Oh, please.
I look great in leather.
I absolutely know you own one.
I do. I have a full leather outfit. I could be on somebody's bike being cute. I can do gay things like ice skate. put me in it. But I had a meeting recently with an executive and they were like, how do you feel about like straight men playing gay roles? And I was like, I don't necessarily have a problem with it in a world where it would be equal. Like, I think everybody should be able to play everybody. But that's not the case. And I literally, this morning, a friend of mine sent me a clip from this show that I auditioned for. And he was like, why is this not you? And it's like this guy that I know is straight because I know him. And he's like doing it. But there's like just like these like affectations that are just like so put on to try to display like gayness in a way that I hate it.
Yeah.
And I was just like. And it just makes me think, like, what is it that you want from this role that you think you're going to get from this person that you can't get from somebody who has a lived experience that can bring something to that role? And it would be very, and I just feel like it would be very different if it was the other shoe. Like, I feel like if I ever play straight, it's because I've written myself that way. Because I don't think that I've been given many opportunities to portray that. Like, there's not many Neil Patrick Harris's, and that was the case when he wasn't out. Like there's like being able to kind of straddle both lines, I think, is a privilege that's one-sided. And so though as a queer person, I think that like, oh, this is cool that like these things are created. Personally, I'm just like, if I'm not in it, keep it.
Great answer.
That's crazy.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm always a little confused about how I feel about who should be playing certain roles. Like every once in a while, like some straight guy will like dial in and I'm like, well, I know that gay guy. Like he created somebody that feels real to me and like belongs in the role or whatever. But other times it's like you'll see a straight guy doing a gay performance and I'm like, I guess there's no accounting for taste on the level of casting here, you know? And it's like, Should I blame casting? I wonder who I should blame.
Yeah, and I know that there are a lot of straight men who are good actors who could play gay. Mm-hmm. I just...
When you have such good skin and you bring experience to the role.
I'm like, well, I'm sure a gay person would if they let somebody do it. Like, and you should take one for the team. Like, quit. And then say, give this to Dwayne Perkins. Like, uh-huh. I think there's a very clear path to fixing this issue. And that's them giving me all those parts.
Right, right. I will say one straight guy who can always play gay no matter what, Mr. Ralph Fiennes. Whatever you want, sir. This is he's my pillion. Whatever you want, baby. I'll sleep on the floor.
Because Voldemort definitely gave
please
fat got. I said, this is a gay man.
Duh.
A gay man with really bad work because that nose is gone.
No, right.
No nose.
Something went wrong.
Like literally, I feel like the first moment he was on screen, he did something like very like cunty, like.
Oh.
And I was like, eat, queen.
Yeah. Cunty straight men, dying breed.
Yeah, because like... and
the British.
Because like, I feel like Stanley Tucci played a really great gay man. I said, he ate that. But there's still a part of me that's like, oh, like you, we just can't see how gay people could eat because they're not just getting the opportunity. So I'm like, oh, what could that have been if it had that extra something? Generally, I don't care. But I do care now because... I'm not getting those roles.
Right. Yeah. No, it's like, it's hard to blame any one person, but all those experiences add up. You know what I mean? Yeah. It becomes this wave of certain people are more likely to play a role that is literally written to be me, you know?
Yeah.
You
and I just don't think it would be a conversation if there wasn't such a scarcity aspect.
Right.
Because people wouldn't be talking about it.
Dwayne Perkins, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Where can we find you on social media if we want to find you in all of the roles you will be stealing from other actors?
Thank you so much. I am going to be the Hamburglar of Hollywood. you can find me at Dwayne Perkins. That's D-E-W-A-Y-N-E Perkins on, I think, pretty much everything. It's the same thing.
And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week on Keep It. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath, and our executive producers are Louis Fertel, Ira Madison III, and Kendra James. Our digital team is Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, Rachel Gajewski, and Jay Banks. This episode was recorded and mixed by Jarek Centeno. Thank you to David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week. Our head of production is Matt DeGroote. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.